So just last week, I was talking on the phone with a friend, who ended up sharing with me, Diego and Mackenzie may not recognize that as a phone, but that's a phone. My kids might not recognize it either. Who ended up sharing with me that he had been feeling pretty depressed. Bob, I am not connected, it seems. For a few days. He said that he had thought about calling me, but didn't want to upset me, and he didn't want me to feel like I had to fix it. To which I quickly responded, "Oh, I don't do that anymore." I don't know why you're laughing. I've gotten really good at just listening without giving advice, without trying to fix anything. I've learned to not do that. And I really meant it. I wasn't just saying those things because it sounded good or because they seemed like the right things to say. Sort of like Peter, I think, in last week's gospel passage, if you were here, you may remember, Jesus had asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter had answered, does anybody remember how Peter answered? Pop quiz. "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And that was the first time he or any of the disciples had said that out loud. It was a big deal. And I'm sure that he, like me when I was talking with my friend, really meant it when he said it. I'm sure that Peter didn't just say that because he thought it was the right thing to say. So back to my phone conversation for a minute. No more than 10 minutes, maybe not even 5 minutes, after I had said those things, what do you suppose came rolling off my tongue? Advice. Ideas about how to fix the problem. They were hidden, granted, under the disguise of comments like, "When I feel depressed, this is what I find helpful." And then suddenly I heard myself and I said, "Oh my gosh, I was just bragging about how I don't do that anymore. And here I am doing it again." That quickly, within a matter of minutes, I had blown it. Again, sort of like Peter. Peter also so quickly blew it. As I mentioned earlier in last week's passage, which was the verses immediately preceding what Jackson read for us this morning, Peter had proclaimed that Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And in today's passage, which is the verses immediately following that, probably not minutes following that, but immediately following, upon hearing Jesus talk about how he was going to suffer, he was going to undergo great suffering and then be killed, Peter blew it big time and basically said to Jesus, "No way, Jose, that is not going to happen. We are not going to let that happen." Or as we heard it read, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." Unlike me, it seems that Peter did not catch himself mid-thought and realize his mistake. But Jesus did. As opposed to my friend who, when I did that, laughed and said, "It's okay." As we both acknowledged what I had done, Jesus came down hard on Peter. And he said, I don't know if you remember what he said. He said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me." Or as it says in the Common English Bible, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stone that could make me stumble." With friends like that, who needs enemies, right? Last week, Jesus also called Peter a stone of sorts. He had said to Peter, following Peter's confession as the Messiah, "You are Petros," which in English is translated as Peter, which in Greek means rock. And then Jesus continued, "And on this Petra," it was a little play on words, because that also means rock in Greek, "on this Petra, I will build my church." So Jesus identified Peter as a rock, but in the most complimentary way, referring to him and his confession that Jesus was the Messiah as strong and sturdy and powerful, a rock on which the church could be built. Then in today's reading, again, just in the next few verses, Jesus also calls Peter a rock, but one that would make him stumble. And not only that, but he called him Satan. Unlike my friend's kind, gentle response at my blunder, Jesus did not laugh and say, "It's okay, Peter." Rather, he seemed to be saying to Peter, "It is absolutely not okay." Even though what Peter said, "God forbid it, Lord, this must not ever happen to you," he said presumably out of love and concern for Jesus, right? He and the other disciples loved Jesus. And of course, they wouldn't want him to suffer. And they would absolutely not want him to be killed. Who would want that for anyone that they love? No one would ever want that for a loved one. And so, of course, Peter responded that way. "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you." I wonder, though, if part of his response came less from a place of concern for Jesus and more from a place of concern for himself and his friends and their people. Jesus was the Messiah, after all. He had just confirmed it himself in front of Peter and all of the disciples. He was the Messiah that Peter and his friends and their people had been waiting for thousands of years. He was the Messiah who would finally make things right, who would bring God's peace and usher in God's justice, who would rule victoriously over the Jews, the rightful king. Jesus was the Messiah. And if he was the Messiah, he couldn't die. He couldn't be the Messiah they'd been longing for if he was dead. How could he do all these things that they'd been waiting so long for the Messiah to show up and do if he were killed? He couldn't. They had waited so long, thousands of years, and finally here he was standing right in front of them, and he's telling them first he's going to undergo great suffering, then he's going to be killed? Peter must have been thinking, "No, that won't work. That won't work for us. That's not what the Messiah is supposed to do. That's not what's needed to make things right. You suffering won't bring peace. You dying won't bring justice. The Messiah being killed won't bring the victory that we have waited so long for." Peter must have been thinking some of those kinds of things. And so he said, "God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you. You are the Messiah," for crying out loud. And Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me." Ouch, for sure. But I think Jesus is saying that this is something that Peter has to get right. This is something that Peter and the rest of the disciples cannot not understand. If they are going to continue to follow him from this point on, claiming that he is the Messiah, they have to get what it means for him to be the Messiah. They have to get what Jesus understands that it means to be the Messiah. And they have to get what it means to follow him as that Messiah. So Jesus says it plainly, albeit harshly, it seems to us, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me." And then he goes on to say, maybe, it seems to me, to soften those words a little bit, to explain his harshness a little bit, "You're setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Or as it says in another version of the Bible, you are not thinking God's thoughts, but human thoughts. Or in the Message, you have no idea how God works." Or in my words, "Peter, your thinking is too small. It's too self-oriented. It's too right now oriented. It's too, God, I know what's right oriented. I know you can't help it," I imagine Jesus saying. "I know your thinking is limited by the world around you and limited by your experience and your history and by everything you've understood your whole life to be right and desirable and even necessary. But hear me, Peter. Hear me, all of you. The way of the Messiah, this way that I am showing you, is so much deeper than all of that. This way of the Messiah that I am teaching you is so much bigger than all of that. This way of the Messiah that I am making known to you, which is not just the way of peace for today, but peace for always. Not just justice for you, but true justice. And not only healing in this moment of time, but healing for all time. And not just victory for you and this generation, but ultimate victory for all of God's creation. This way that I'm revealing to you is different than everything you've understood and experienced and known before. And you have to get that. You have to see me in who I am and what I'm about. You have to understand what it means to follow me, as the Messiah. If you are going to continue to follow me, you have to let me lead, or you will be in the way. You have to follow my lead, or you will go the wrong way. Follow me. Get behind me and watch me. Watch what I do, and then do what I do without expecting the results that you think you want, without looking for the outcomes that you've always been taught to seek. Put those expectations aside. Let go of them. Lose them. And do what I do. Watch what I want. And then want what I want. Without being afraid that you won't get what you need. Without being afraid that you'll get what you don't want. Put those fears aside. Don't hold on to them. Lose them and want what I want. It won't be easy. It will be hard, maybe even the hardest thing you've ever done, and you'll have to do it time and time and time again. And it won't always make sense, not in the way that things have made sense to you up to now. And you won't be able to explain it to people because it won't make sense in the way that they think it should make sense. But it will be worth it. It will lead you to life. It will lead you beyond your fears and beyond death to true and deep and full and everlasting life and peace and justice and healing, and not just for you, but for all of God's creation, and not just for today, but for always. If you can follow my lead, if you can get behind me and watch me, and do what I do and want what I want. If you can follow me in this way of being the Messiah, it will be worth it. It will be like nothing you've ever imagined. It will be better than anything you've ever dreamed. And so, Peter, and all of you, can you get behind me and follow me? May it be so. Amen.